Welcome to today's reading of the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American, read by volunteers and staff. You can hear this program on Recording Library of West Texas Radio and on demand at recordinglibrary.org.
Hello, I'm Jesse. I'm reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 9th. County to see little change in elections. Administrator says new voting law won't have major impact on process. The story was written by Stuart Doreen. Quote, voting will be just like it always has been, unquote. That is how Midland County Elections Administrator Carolyn Graves described the impact inside Midland County of Senate Bill 1, which Governor Greg Abbott signed into law on Tuesday. Graves said there will not be any changes to the number of days, number of hours, the county's voting centers, or anything like that. She said there will still be two early voting days with voting from 7 a.m. to 7 p.m., and, during elections when weekend voting takes place, 5 hours of early voting on a Sunday. Quote, for a small election like this November, there will be no weekend voting, said Graves, who said that is consistent with smaller elections in the past. As for drive-through voting or 24-hour voting, Midland County has never done that, so, quote, voting will just be like it always has been, end quote. Graves said most of the impact of Senate Bill 1 will be administrative as some election-related forms and applications have changes, a word here or a sentence there. Also changing is the form for voter registrars, those officially registering voters in the state of Texas. Graves did say that the one area that may impact some people is with the ballot by mail. She said those participating using ballot by mail will have to send in an identification form with the ballot. It used to be that a person could send in an application in January and be covered for the entire year. Graves said the new rule goes into effect next year, so those that have sent in the annual form this year are covered for the November election. She also said the new law actually adds to the number of people eligible to use ballot by mail. She said, generally, ballot by mail is offered to those people 65 and older or those disabled. She said the new law includes women who are pregnant and set to have a baby within 3 months of an election, or women who have had a baby up to 3 months prior to an election. Quote, I think we will have challenges to get accustomed to, Graves said. I think my attitude is that we work with the law. That is what we will do. We will make it as effortless for voters as possible, end quote. Midland Memorial Hospital patient total number drops below 100. Testing centers saw rates higher than 30% for several weeks. Hospital numbers ease. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The number of COVID-19 patients at Midland Memorial Hospital fell below 100 on Wednesday for the first time since August 19th. There were 99 coronavirus patients in the hospital Wednesday morning, 84 of which are active cases and 15 are convalescing patients, according to Stephen Bowerman, Chief Operations Officer at Midland Health. The positivity rate for Midland Health testing has also dropped down to the 20% range for the last few days after being above 30% for several weeks, Bowerman said. Here are more highlights from Wednesday morning's briefing. Chief Nursing Officer Kit Predimus said the hospital has opened an additional 6 beds for a total of 24 overflow beds on the medical floor. During the last COVID-19 wave, there were 36 beds in operation on that floor, but Predimus said lack of available staff has prevented them from being able to open more beds. The overflow tent outside the emergency department will resume operations after it was closed because of the heat, Predimus said. He said staff have added 2 more air conditioning units in the tent to maintain a cooler temperature. The age range of COVID-19 patients was between 26 and 91 on Wednesday. Bowerman said about 36% of coronavirus patients are under 40 years old. Of the 99 COVID-19 patients on Wednesday, 87% were unvaccinated, which translates to 13 breakthrough cases of individuals who are vaccinated. About 11% of COVID-19 patients are from outside Midland County. There were two coronavirus deaths in the last 24 hours, a 47-year-old and a 62-year-old. Bowerman said one of those patients was fully vaccinated and the other was not, and both patients had significant underlying conditions. There have been 10 COVID-19 deaths in Midland County in the last week. Mass vaccination clinics will resume on September 14th for 3 days a week, Tuesday, Wednesday, and Thursday. Initial, second, and booster shots of the Pfizer vaccine will be available. Booster shots are currently approved only for those who are transplant recipients or immunocompromised. Bowerman said it will be on the honor system that those who sign up for boosters are eligible. Appointments for the vaccine clinics are available at midlandhealth.org/schedulemyvaccine. Two more quakes detected near city. USGS data reports 81 incidents in nearby cluster just this year. The story was written by Caitlin Randall. The U.S. Geological Survey reported two more earthquakes north of Midland after a 3.7 magnitude earthquake was detected in the same area Monday night. There was a 2.4 magnitude earthquake at about 3:20 a.m. Tuesday and a 2.6 magnitude earthquake at 4:10 a.m. Wednesday, according to USGS data. USGS data show there have been 81 earthquakes this year in one cluster, a 7-mile stretch about 9 miles north of Midland. The cluster is near the intersection of State Highway 349 and the Nadine-Tom Craddock Highway and sits in the middle of several oil fields. Of those 81 earthquakes, two were above a 3.0 magnitude, including a 3.7 magnitude earthquake at 10:05 p.m. Monday. There were 11 earthquakes at those coordinates in 2020, three of which were above 3.0. Experts told the reported Telegram last week that an increase in seismicity in West Texas is likely because of oil companies injecting wastewater near faults or cracks in the Earth's crust. Quote, when you inject fluid into the subsurface of the ground, it changes the pressure state of the ground, and that will tend to activate faults that already exist, said Murray Litherland, manager of New Mexico Tech's Seismological Observatory. There are about 20 disposal wells near the cluster of earthquakes, and dozens more in the surrounding area, according to data available in the Texas Railroad Commission's GIS viewer. The 3.7 magnitude earthquake on Monday night occurred at a depth of 4.4 miles, while Tuesday and Wednesday's earthquakes were at a depth of 3.1 miles and 4.3 miles, respectively. Injecting wastewater deeper into rock formations may increase the risk of induced earthquakes, according to Daniel Trugman, an associate professor of geological studies and head of the Earthquake Science Lab at the University of Texas at Austin. However, if oil companies don't inject the fluid deep enough, it could contaminate aquifers and drinking water, he said. Quote, they can't inject it too shallow because that would get into the drinking water, so they have to find somewhere they think it's safe to inject, but that might also be near some potentially active faults, Trugman said. He said, geoscientists, quote, don't have a perfect or even near-perfect understanding of all the fault systems that are there and how they're oriented, unquote, making it difficult to know where oil companies should be injecting to reduce the possibility of earthquakes.
Hi, this is Linda. I'm reading the Midland Reporter Telegram for Thursday, September 9th, 2021. MOSC to open season with concert this weekend by J.C. Lewis. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale opens its season with Get the Picture this Saturday. The concert features Modest Mussorgsky's famous pictures at an exhibition. Piano enthusiasts can enjoy George Gershwin's Rhythmic Concerto in F, performed by renowned pianist and Steinway artist Li Wang. Wang has enjoyed a successful career as a soloist and performed with symphonies across the globe. He is a highly sought-after adjudicator and clinician. He was hailed as a colorist of exemplary control by the New York Concert Review for his sold-out Carnegie Hall debut. The evening also will showcase a new work titled Diamond Rain by Roshan Epzadi. The concert begins at 7:30 p.m. at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center. Tickets start at $11 with student tickets at $8. Visit https://www.mosc.org/ for tickets.
Here are some obituaries that appeared in the Midland Reporter Telegram on Thursday, September 9th. UTPB mourns former leader. The University of Texas Permian Basin is sad to announce the passing of former university president Dwayne Leach. Leach was president of UT Permian Basin from 1983 to 1991, but remained at the university until 2003 as the first executive director of the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute and a history professor. He passed away on September 3rd at the age of 86. For more than 40 years, Leach served as a trustee for the Caesar Kleberg Foundation for Wildlife Conservation. Family members asked for donations to be made to the conservation in his name for anyone interested. In light of the COVID-19 pandemic, no services are planned at this time. Alonzo Efaleo Holguin Jr., age 71, of Midland, passed away peacefully Saturday, September 4th, under Kindred Hospice care at Midland Memorial Hospital. He was born on July 14, 1950, in Midland, to Alonzo Holguin Sr. and Sarita Silva Holguin. He left behind to cherish his memories his sons Roy Holguin and Reuben Holguin of Midland, Robert Holguin of Weatherford, Texas, Eddie Holguin of Ranger, Texas, and one daughter, Carol Garcia, of Eastland, Texas. His sisters, Virginia Holguin of Reno, Nevada, Gloria Ramirez of Indio, California, Sarita Flote and Carolyn Holguin of Midland, his brothers, Jesse Holguin Sr. and Eddie Holguin of Midland, as well as several grandchildren. His parents and siblings, Alonzo Sr. and Sarita Holguin, Guadalupe Holguin, and Janie Holguin Fields preceded him in death. Visitation will be held on Thursday, September 9th, from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. at the Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home and Chapel in Midland, with a rosary service to be held at 7 p.m. the same day. The funeral services will follow at 10 a.m. on Friday, September 10th, at Our Lady of Guadalupe Catholic Church Shrine. Burial services immediately follow at Fairview Cemetery. Funeral service is under the direction of Llewellyn Garcia Pitkin Funeral Home and Chapel. Family messages and condolences may be emailed to pipkin@nts-online.net, or you can visit our website at www.llewellyngarciapitkinfh.com. Golden Fay Beale was born March 23, 1934, to Father William Beale and Mother Lila Gertrude Harris Beale in Calvert, Texas. Golden attended Calvert High School and after graduation went on to graduate from Prairie View A&M in 1957 with a degree in science and master's degree in math in 1965. Golden married Samuel Gibbs from the neighboring town of Bremen, Texas in 1958. Golden passed away at the age of 87 on Sunday, September 5th in Midland. Funeral service will be held on Friday, September 10th at 11 a.m. at Visionary Hallowell Community United Methodist Church in Midland. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. She is survived by sons Billy Gibbs and Stancil Gibbs and a grandson, Antorius Gibbs. She is preceded in death by husband Samuel Gibbs. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. John William Daniels passed from this life on earth on Monday, September 6th, after a long illness. John was born on September 10th, 1943, in Cape Girardeau, Missouri, to Otis A. Daniels and Mary Elizabeth Hone Daniels. He graduated from Morehouse, Missouri High School. As valedictorian of his class, he earned a scholarship to Southeast Missouri State College. He worked in Houston, Midland, Libya, and back to Midland. He married his wife, Wilma Stovall, on June 3, 1966, while both were employed with Robert H. Ray Geophysical Company. John was preceded in death by his parents. He is survived by his wife, Wilma, of the home. Family received guests Wednesday, September 8th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 12 p.m. Thursday, September 9th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Burial will follow at Rest Haven Memorial Park. Memorials may be made to Permian Basin Geophysical Society, Post Office Box 361, Midland, Texas, 79702, or a charity of your choice. Arrangements are under the direction of Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences can be made at www.npwelch.com. Wanda Jean Thomas Lomax, age 84, of Odessa, went to be with the Lord on Saturday, September 4th. She passed away peacefully, surrounded by loved ones. Visitation will be Saturday, September 11th, from 10 a.m. to 11 a.m. at Parkview Church of Christ, 1700 Park Boulevard in Odessa. Funeral services will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 11th, at Parkview Church of Christ, with Denny Wilson and Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell officiating. Wanda was born in Ranger, Texas, on September 27th, 1936, to Ethel Keck Thomas and Leroy Thomas. She attended high school in Midland and graduated from Nooksack Valley High School in Washington State. Shortly after, she made her way back to Texas. On January 10, 1956, she married Robert Lomax. They had four children together and lived in Odessa. Wanda is survived by her husband, Robert Lomax of Odessa, her children, Randy Lomax of Big Spring, Donnie Lomax of Odessa, and Craig Lomax and Heather Golden of Odessa. Her sister, Carolyn and Richard Seiler of Odessa, and Glenda and Milton McMillan of Ballinger, Texas. She is also survived by grandchildren and great-grandchildren. You are welcome to send flowers, or you can donate to your favorite charity. Services entrusted to Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. To send condolences to the family, please sign her guestbook at www.sunsetodessa.com. Benita Bustamante, age 42, passed away September 5th. Viewing will be held from 12 p.m. to 9 p.m. Friday, September 17th, at Nellie Pickle and Welch Funeral Home. Funeral service will be held at 11 a.m. Saturday, September 18th at Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home Chapel. Arrangements are under the direction of Nally Pickle and Welch Funeral Home and Crematory of Midland. Online condolences may be made at www.npwelch.com. Gertrude Dora Heiser Johnson, age 97, of Midland, died Thursday, August 26, in Midland. Graveside services will be held at 10 a.m. September 11th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Chaplain Skip Hedgepeth is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Leroy Manier, age 40, of Midland, passed away September 3rd. Cremation services have been arranged. Lee is survived by a sister, Maria Rodriguez Minier, of Alexandria, Virginia. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Minier family at this time. Philip Lee Minier, Jr., age 42, of Midland, passed away September 3rd. Cremation services have been arranged. Philip is survived by a sister, Maria Rodriguez Minier, of Alexandria, Virginia. Online condolences can be received at www.asanchezTFH.com. Avalos Sanchez and Thomas Funeral Home is honored to serve the Minier family at this time.
Hello, this is Cindy reading from the Odessa American for Thursday, September 9th. City garbage, water, and sewer rates may increase, by Federico Martinez. The average Odessa homeowner will pay a total of $1.93 more per month for water, sewer, and solid waste services, according to rate increases being considered by City Council. Council, which briefly discussed the proposed rate increases during their Tuesday work session, is expected to officially approve the 2.5% rate hikes for water, sewer, and sanitation during their September 14th council meeting. Mayor Javier Hoven was quick to point out that the rate increases will not be used to repay a $95 million certificate of obligation that council in August approved to pay for the rehabilitation of the city's water treatment plant. That's correct, Assistant City Manager of Administrative Affairs Cindy Muncy told council. The rate increases are needed to cover inflation, equipment costs, and an increase in employee salaries. The rate increases will take effect in October. The average Odessa household will see a 52-cent increase in their monthly solid waste bills, Muncy said. Residents who live in apartments or mobile homes will see a 27-cent increase. Small businesses will see a $2 per month increase. The average household will see their sewer rates increase by 53 cents per month, and residents who use 2,000 gallons or less per month will see their bills go up by 32 cents per month, Muncy said. Water users will also see a 2.5% increase in their bills, with users of 5,000 gallons per month seeing their bills go up by $1.92, and rates for residents who use 2,000 gallons will increase by $1.32. Qualifying senior citizens 65 years or older will pay $1 per 2,000 gallons. UTPB Sports Park. During Tuesday's work session, council was also asked to consider giving UTPB up to $430,000 so that the university can purchase and install new athletic equipment at their sports park. UTPB recently allowed several local sports associations that had been using the university's sports fields for years to remove equipment and even building structures that the sports groups had purchased over the years. The sports groups decided to relocate after UTPB and the city's long-term contract expired. leaders from the sports associations refused to sign new contracts with the university. The proposed new contracts would have required the sports groups to pay a small fee to continue to use the school's facilities, submit to annual financial audits, and give the university oversight of the use of their own fields. City Manager Michael Marrero and several city council members expressed support for giving UTPB the requested $430,000. Councilman Steve Thompson said he supported the request because the city currently doesn't have a park in the east part of Odessa. "We have no park on that side of town," Thompson said. "It's an investment in our community." UTPB President Sandra Woodley said the university will continue to make the park open to the public and is already in the process of signing new youth and adult sports clubs who are interested in using the facilities. Woodley said school officials have not yet decided how much they will charge organizations to use the sports fields. Woodley told council that the university has already been approached by 72 organizations, including flag football teams, soccer clubs, and baseball and softball organizations that are interested in using the sports facilities. The university has already spent $215,000 on new soccer goal posts and hope to have soccer teams playing on the fields in October. The university is also working to schedule regional and statewide athletic tournaments at the sports park. Marrero said the $430,000 requested could come from the city's general fund or from hotel occupancy tax dollars. Woodley reminded council that the sports associations have been given until August 31st to remove equipment and building structures from the campus sports park. Several scoreboards, fencing, bleachers, and storage and concession buildings were left behind, and Woodley asked city officials if they knew whether the sports groups were planning to return to retrieve the items. Hovind noted that according to the city's contract with the sports associations, any equipment or buildings the groups installed at the sports park immediately became the city's property. Hovind said as far as he was concerned, the city could legally give UTPB the left-behind equipment and structures. City Manager Marrero said to avoid any conflict, city staff would double-check with the sports groups. Odessa College President Gregory Williams and his staff on Tuesday asked council to consider donating a plot of downtown land so that the college could begin working on a $1.5 million Phase 1 plan to create more green space and landscaping downtown and construct stage area for community concerts and events. The requested property is the former site of the Odessa American, located at 4th and Jackson. The proposed plan would also include the installation of new splash pads, seating areas, and additional programs and activities designed to attract a younger crowd downtown, Williams said. "It's something we could have up in 12 to 18 months. The second phase would include construction of a new three-story school building that would house the college's entrepreneurial classes," Williams said. "The new facility would also house a business incubator where students could launch new businesses. Council sounded very supportive of the plan, but did not indicate whether it would be on next Tuesday's agenda." COVID funding. Representatives from Medical Center Hospital and Odessa Regional Medical Center made separate pleas to council requesting American Recovery Plan Act funds. Hospital officials said the funds are needed to help them hire more nursing staff to care for COVID-19 patients. Council recently received $10 million in ARPA funds. MCH is requesting $4 million. ORMC, $2,592,000. MCH President and CEO Russell Tippin said MCH is struggling with a severe nursing shortage at a time when COVID numbers have increased locally. His concerns were echoed by ORMC President Stacy Brown. Tippin and Brown said they are literally competing for nurses with hospitals around the world. It's put quite a strain on our facility, Brown said. If we can't get any more help within the next 2 weeks, we'll have to cut back on the number of COVID patients we can take. Councilman Thompson said he supported the funding requests because the city would be reimbursed by the federal government. Tippin told council he has made a similar request to county commissioners, but they have postponed making a decision. Thompson, who had asked Tippin if the county commission had taken any action yet, was incensed when told it hadn't. So they've put their decision on hold. Is COVID on hold for you? Thompson asked Tippin. The city keeps stepping up and doing what they should be doing. Why can't the county? It's supposed to be called the county health department, not the city health department. Council will vote on the funding requests during their September 14th meeting, Hoven said. Vaccination clinic. Council did express unanimous support for a temporary COVID vaccine clinic that would be run by the city's Fire Rescue Department, UTPB, and the County Health Department. The city would contribute $34,000 to the effort, which would pay for staff time to man the clinic, Fire Rescue Assistant Chief Rod Huber said. The county has agreed to provide the vaccines, and UTPB would provide student nurses and medical students to help with the clinic's operation. The outdoor clinic would be set up on the UTPB campus and begin operating September 21st from 9 a.m. to 1 p.m., Tuesday through Friday, for 20 days, Huber said. The goal will be to provide 6,000 to 10,000 doses of vaccines total, with a goal of 500 vaccines per day. First and second shots will be offered free of charge. Booster shots could also be offered with a doctor's note until state of Texas approval, Huber added. Happy Tales for These Cattle Herders by Federico Martinez. He darted to the left and then circled right as his handler barked directions at Scooch, a 4-year-old border collie, who initially struggled to herd 3 stubborn young calves into a nearby pen. When the timed exercise was over, a beaming, tail-wagging Scooch rejoined his pleased owner, Jim Rochester, who vowed his dog's efforts will improve as the day progresses. Rochester and Scooch of Springtown, Texas, are one of 55 duos participating in the Permian Basin Fair Cattle Dog Trial Contest, being held from 9 a.m. to 3 p.m. Wednesday and Thursday. The free event is held in the Outback Arena. It's always difficult in the morning, said Rochester, whose 2 dogs, Scooch and 6-year-old Goose, were among the first participants Wednesday morning at the Permian Basin Fair's dog trials. These cattle are fresh, but once they get broken in, it gets easier. Each dog must try to complete 5 obstacle courses, earning points for each cow they successfully herd into each course's pen, said Barney Fowler, who oversees the herding contest. The dogs have 7 minutes to herd the calves into the pens. A maximum of 75 points can be earned. Dogs are judged on their performance and behavior, Fowler explained. Dogs and handlers are also judged by how well they interact and communicate. There are 4 contest categories: novice, intermediate, advanced, and open challenge. The top scorers receive cash awards along with a belt buckle, Fowler said. A lot of time is spent training the dogs, said Kyle Dillard, who traveled from New Mexico to participate in the Permian Basin Fair. We start training them when they're 10 months to 1 year old. We train them every day, teaching them how to herd and listen to our voice commands. Dillard, like many of the other contest participants, travel around the country, entering their dogs in various fair competitions. I do it for the sport and competition, Dillard said. Historically, border collies have been bred to be cattle and sheep herders, so they are born with that natural instinct, Fowler said. The secret to developing an excellent herder is to develop a close bond with a dog. Most of the guys here use their dogs to gather cattle and sheep. It's part of the ranch life. Events like this are just for fun. But don't try telling Scooch that. After a brief water break and some love and attention from his owner, the border collie begins making his way to the obstacle course. He looks like a prize fighter heading into battle, except for that wagging tail and that grin-like facial expression that indicates the fun is just beginning. Memorial Garden fountain repairs to cost $48,000. The Memorial Garden Park fountain is expected to be repaired and operating by the end of the week, just in time to be lit with red, white, and blue lights in honor of those who lost their lives in a series of terrorist attacks on the U.S. on the morning of September 11, 2001. City of Odessa Parks and Recreation Director Steve Patton said. The fountain was turned off recently so that several repairs could be made. This is the second time since May that the fountain had to be repaired due to torrential rains. The city had to replace a broken nozzle after the first storm, a second storm damaged a section of piping, and then a large plastic bag was sucked into the water pump, causing the pump to burn up. It's been difficult finding the right piping for the current fountain, which was constructed in 1995. The total cost for the new pump and piping is $48,000 and will be paid for through the department's regular maintenance funds. The $48,000 will also be used to purchase a new cover to protect the pump from debris. The fountain isn't just for aesthetics, Patton said. It also keeps the water from becoming stagnant and smelly due to animal feces. Quick hits. Jurassic Quest drive-thru. A Jurassic Quest drive-thru has been scheduled Friday through September 19th at the Midland County Horseshoe Arena, 2514 Arena Trail, Midland. Public hours are 11 a.m. to 8 p.m. September 10th, 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. September 11th and 18th, 9 a.m. to 8 p.m. September 12th, 16th, and 17th, 1 p.m. to 8 p.m. September 15th, and 9 a.m. to 5 p.m. September 19th, closed Mondays and Tuesdays. Tickets are $49 per vehicle, 8 people or less. For tickets, visit www.jurassicquest.com. Live performance. Austin Mead is scheduled to perform live from 6 p.m. to 10 p.m. Friday at the Ector Theater, 500 North Texas Avenue. For tickets or more information, visit theector.com. Septemberfest. Museum of the Southwest, 1705 West Missouri Avenue, Midland, has scheduled its 52nd annual Septemberfest Art Festival Friday and Saturday. The Septemberfest preview party, Under the Desert Sky, will take place from 7 p.m. to 11 p.m. Friday. The daytime festival will continue from 9 a.m. to 9 p.m. Saturday. There will be shop artist booths, demonstrations, food and drinks, Austin Bike Zoo special attractions, live mural painting by Mary Pullman, and more. This year, Kinderfest programs will focus on their mission to immerse young visitors in experiences that inspire curiosity and interaction with art and science, while also providing a fun environment. A portion of Kinderfest activities will be tailored to provide a glimpse of the new Children's Museum, expected to reopen in the first quarter of 2022. Tables are available for purchase. For preview party tables, general admission seats, or more information, call 432-683-2882 or visit museumsw.org/Septemberfest. Local News Roundup. Band Day. The University of Texas Permian Basin Music Department has scheduled Spirit of the Permian Basin Band Day from 8 a.m. to 10 a.m. Saturday. The event is open to all high school band students. For more information, email Kevin Richardson, Director of Bands, at band@utpb.edu. OLA Workshop. The Ella Noel Art Museum, 4909 East University Boulevard, has scheduled an OLA workshop taught by San Antonio ceramicist Diana Kersey from 9 a.m. to 4 p.m. Saturday. Learn how to make a porous OLA that can live buried in the garden as an ancient form of irrigation. Advanced registration is required, and spots are limited to this workshop, so register today before it fills up. To register or for more information, contact Annie, educator at the Ella Noel Art Museum, at 432-550-9696, extension 213, or email education@noelartmuseum.org or visit noelartmuseum.org. Car and Bike Show Fundraiser. The Combat Veterans Motorcycle Association 2322 has scheduled the second annual Car and Bike Show benefiting the homeless veterans of the Permian Basin at 4 p.m. Saturday at the VFW Post 4149, Midland. Registration is set from 1 p.m. to 4 p.m., and awards will be presented at 7 p.m. All donations will be greatly appreciated. PayPal, CVMA2322TRES at gmail.com. First Responders Tailgate. First Basin Credit Union, Texas Tactical Jeeps, and UTPB are teaming up to honor all the first responders in the Permian Basin for a tailgate in their honor at 3 p.m. Saturday at Ratliff Stadium. Cooked food will be provided by Texas Tactical Jeeps. The UTPB Falcon game will kick off against West Texas A&M at 6 p.m., presented by First Basin Credit Union. First Basin is providing for all tickets for first responders from anywhere in the Permian Basin. For more information or to contribute, contact Richard Acosta at 432-552-3678 or by email at acosta_r@utpb.edu or J.D. Anderson at 432-614-7685 or by email at texastacticaljeeps@gmail.com. MOSC Concert and Exhibition. The Midland Odessa Symphony and Chorale will open its 59th season with Get the Picture at 7:30 p.m. Saturday at the Wagner Knoll Performing Arts Center, 1310 Farm to Market, 1788 Midland. The concert will feature Modest Mussorgsky's famous Pictures at an Exhibition. George Gershwin's Concerto in F will be performed by renowned pianist and Steinway artist Lei Wang. Rounding out the evening is a contemporary piece, Diamond Rain, by Roshan Etizadi. Tickets start at $11 and can be purchased at mosc.org or by calling 800-514-3849. Former UTPB president dies. Leach also was founding executive director of JBS Leadership Institute. A former University of Texas Permian Basin president, Dwayne Leach, died September 3rd. He was 86. Leach, who was living in Irving, was president of UT Permian Basin from 1983 to 1991. But remained at the university until 2003 as the first executive director of the John Ben Shepherd Leadership Institute and a history professor. We are sad to learn of the passing of President Leach, UTPB President Sandra Woodley said in a news release. His vision and energy contributed to a solid foundation for UTPB that continues to be part of our success today. He will be missed by the entire Falcon family. During Leach's tenure, the university became a four-year institution. Previously, it was just for upperclassmen and the Center for Energy and Economic Diversification, CEED was established. In 2010, Leach was awarded emeritus status by UTPB. For more than 40 years, Leach served as a trustee for the Cesar Clayburgh Foundation for Wildlife Conservation. Family members ask for donations to be made to the conservation in his name for anyone interested. In light of the COVID-19 pandemic, no services are planned at this time. Former UTPB President David Watts said Leach was the founding executive director of the JBS Institute for the first 3 or 4 years that Watts served at the university. He was extraordinarily articulate, careful, and engaging, Watts said. Watts said he attended a public event his first year as president in 2001, where Leach was the keynote speaker. He said it was 5 or 6 years after Leach's departure from the presidency. I think so many people admired and appreciated this thoughtful, articulate analysis of the area and its potential. As the leader of the JBS Institute, he led a statewide effort to challenge young professionals, identifying and developing plans for community improvement all over the state. Some of the staff of the Institute would travel all over the state and conduct workshops and helping communities to develop indigenous leadership, Watts said. He was a tremendous asset to the university, he added. Among Leach's achievements as president was getting UTPB put back into the state budget, literally saving it, Watts said, and legislation authorizing 4-year status for the university. Watts added that Leach was always collegial and helpful, allowing the new president to lead. He didn't try to impose his own agenda. He just offered suggestions, advice, and support, Watts added. Student charged with claiming to have a weapon on campus. Hector County ISD police charged a middle school student with threat of a gun on a school campus, a Class A misdemeanor. Tuesday afternoon at Wilson and Young Medal of Honor Middle School, a student came forward reporting that another student claimed to have a gun. School leaders notified district police, who responded with ECISD's weapons, K-9. The student, an 8th-grade boy, was located. No weapon was found on him or in his locker. Hector County ISD leaders want to take this opportunity to remind parents to talk with their kids about this kind of behavior. Claims of weapons on campus will be taken seriously and charges will be filed against those making the claim. ECISD wants to thank the student who came forward and the ECISD officers who responded quickly and effectively. Ensuring schools and offices are safe for students and staff members will always be top priority. Texas officials work to launch antibody infusion centers. On behalf of the governor, the Texas Medical Board is sharing information about the establishment and expansion of antibody infusion centers in communities across the state for the treatment of COVID-19. Governor Greg Abbott, the Texas Division of Emergency Management, and the Texas Department of State Health Services have established these centers with the goal of preventing a patient's condition from worsening and ultimately requiring hospital care. These state-sponsored infusion centers are in addition to the antibody infusion treatments that are provided by more than 200 private health providers across the state. Antibody infusion centers are currently operating in the following communities, with more coming online in the future: Lubbock, TDEM, Odessa, TDEM. The treatment is free and available to all Texans who test positive for COVID-19 and have a doctor's referral. Texans can visit meds.tdem.texas.gov to find a therapeutic provider near them. Zavala, Working Toward a Micro-Society, by Ruth Campbell. Having seen the success of its careers and community program campus years ago, Zavala Elementary School wanted to revive it. The kindergarten through second grade campus recently received a $3,000 grant from the Oliver Foundation to recreate it. Through after-school and in-class lessons on economics, math, language arts, fine arts, and community education, students will operate a mini-society type of program. The program covers all areas of the curriculum and includes health, wellness, and fitness. Ultimately, the school is aiming for a mini-town with businesses, peacekeepers, community helpers, medical clinics, a court system, and many of the same ingredients that make up a real-life city. Some storefronts and supplies will be sponsored by area businesses, while others will need funding. The goal is for each student to have a job and purpose in the community. Principal Tanya Galindo is hoping to get students from career and technical education to build the storefronts. The campus has about 400 students, Galindo said. On a recent Wednesday, teacher Sandy Huertas presented a lesson on the benefits of fruits and vegetables and the colors of the rainbow. Students were given small pieces of peppers and fruit to place on a paper plate in the shape of a rainbow. They also answered questions about the benefit of the produce by saying what it was good for, such as treating inflammation. Adeline Mata said she learned about reversible and non-reversible changes, such as when you boil an egg, it can't go back to its previous form. Devin Compton said the lesson felt good. We learned how to eat healthy food, Compton said. He added that he thinks healthy eating is something he'll keep trying to do as he gets older. Galindo said Huertas, the magnet school teacher, sees every student in the school throughout the week, so they all receive the same lessons. She also has students who participate in the magnet or choice program who get an hour at the end of the day. We try to teach on a little bit of everything, Huertas said. She added that she tries to incorporate reading as well, for example. Huertas said the lessons seem to stick with the students. I know me growing up, if it was hands-on, I had fun, especially if I was able to taste it. I loved it and it was memorable for me, she said. Huertas noted that the students are still bringing up things from last year. One student found a seed in an orange and said they were going to plant it. They learn it and they remember it, Huertas said. She also wants to make sure the students understand the health aspects because it's not just good for right now, but later in life, too, and it can impact their families. Galindo said this program is something Zavala had been doing even before they were awarded the grant. I used to be a classroom teacher here before I was the principal. I was a teacher here and then an assistant principal. During that time, we were a micro-society campus. A micro-society is a mini-society in which students open their own businesses. They have to write business plans. They have to interview for jobs. They have to purchase supplies. They have to create their own products, then sell their own products, Galindo said. We had a health clinic. We had a court system. We had peace officers. Lots of businesses. We had a workout center. So we're doing a mini version of that right now with Community and Career Initiative. Our ultimate goal is to become a micro-society campus again. These are lifelong skills that we're teaching our students, so when they grow up and they are in high school, they are ready to get a job. They have those skills already, Galindo added. She said the school didn't have a magnet program after school last year because of COVID, but this year we do. So we're starting all over with it. And Celeste Potter and the Education Foundation have helped, and Dr. Susan Lara has helped with a grant writing. First Basin Credit Union adopted our campus, so they're helping us with getting our storefronts going. They're going to be coming in teaching our students basic banking lessons, talking about financial literature and literacy, and teaching them how to open a savings account and how to write checks, because they'll have to do that with our mini society that we'll have on campus. And then we have JSA Architects. They also graciously have been helping us on our campus with what we need. She added that the students and parents are glad the Careers and Community Program is back. Death notices from the Odessa American for Thursday. Joe Francis Boring, 73, of Odessa, died Saturday, September 4th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 2 p.m. September 9th at Faith Fellowship Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Pastor Becky Hand is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Luis Alex Lujan Franco, 26, of Odessa, died Monday, August 30th in Odessa. Funeral service is scheduled for 1 p.m. September 10th at Holy Redeemer Catholic Church. Burial to follow at American Heritage Cemetery. Arrangements are by Acres West Funeral Chapel of Odessa. Willard Royce Gladson, 82, died Wednesday, September 1st in Odessa. Services are pending with Frank W. Wilson Funeral Directors of Odessa. Gertrude Dora Heiser Johnson, 97, of Midland, died Thursday, August 26th in Midland. Graveside service is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 11th at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Chaplain Skip Hedgepeth is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa. Damon Lionel Love, 47, of Kermit, died Thursday, September 2nd in Odessa. Celebration of life is scheduled for Friday, 2 p.m., September 10th, at Greater St. John Baptist Church. At the family's request, cremation has been selected as the alternative means of burial. Family and friends are officiating. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Sergio L. Ramirez, 48, of Odessa, died Friday, September 3rd in Odessa. Mass will be celebrated Friday at 2 p.m., September 10th at St. Joseph's Catholic Church. Burial will follow at Sunset Memorial Gardens. Arrangements are by Martinez Funeral Home and Crematory of Odessa. Benny Dean Raiders, 74, of Odessa, died Sunday, September 5th in Athens. Celebration of life is scheduled for 10 a.m. September 13th at Sunset Memorial Funeral Home. Reverend Dr. Jimmy Braswell is officiating. Arrangements are by Sunset Memorial Gardens and Funeral Home of Odessa.
We've been reading from the Midland Reporter Telegram and the Odessa American. Please stay tuned for the weather, followed by the second hour's reading of the newspapers.